The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Well, I'm joined in studio, first of all, this morning by Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor for the Irish Times. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
You've been looking through the papers. I'll just flick through the headlines, first of all. The Business Post revealed public sector pay deal risks blowing Budget 27. That's the main headline. They've an article inside, Farage turns to farce. That's about a bad week for Nigel. Show Infantino the red card. Another story in the Business Post, a bad week for Gianni, one would imagine. The Sunday Times, Harris plans $1.5 billion income tax giveaway. And then they tell us that the identity of the Irish killer of the American nurse in Hungary has been revealed. That's also a story in the Sunday Independent. And they have an interview with the creche worker who halted the Parnell Square attacker. And the headline is, I hate how just how much 15 seconds has changed my whole life. And the Irish Mail on Sunday, the flow of immigrants over border halves after the Belfast attack. Now, Mark, you've been going through the papers in detail. What takes your eye?
Well, there's quite a lot about tax in the upcoming budget, and clearly the focus of ministers is already turning on that. And there's a lot of talk about increasing of tax bands to €46,000 and that it's a particular demand of Simon Harris. Now, that issue of increasing bands is always interesting about how it's perceived as a tax giveaway, when you could argue that if the band isn't increased, it's a tax increase. But it's certainly going to be costly. And it's going to be set against the backdrop of public sector pay talks, where public sector unions have already made it clear at the last talks in Dublin Castle that they have learned lessons from the fuel protests, and that they are going to be pretty sticky when it comes to the talks, and that they're going to be active in terms of disruption and strikes. So that's going to be a particularly difficult chapter for government to manage. And this is all happening at a time when we are spending 6 out of every 7 euro we get in corporation taxes, which can be reasonably regarded as windfall, on current day-to-day spending, and we're building that into future spending. And one of these days, it's going to catch up with us.
So even though we're entering what might be called a political silly season, Budget 27 already looming large in the thinking of ministers.
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, and an awful lot of work is going to be done on this over the summer when perhaps other people aren't paying too much attention. And, you know, we have all the usual issues, massive overruns in health. There's a significant overrun in education. There are endless demands from everybody, all of us believing that our particular demand is justified and realistic and all the rest of it. And that has to be squared by ministers in a coalition. And you have somebody in the form of Simon Harris, who tends to be somewhat dictated by the news list of the day.
Now, going to UK politics, a bad week for Nigel Farage. His, by the way, his name is probably Farage, but it's become Farage.
Indeed.
It's been poshified.
Indeed.
Anyway, Farage has had a bad week because he ends up going for a by-election, having resigned his seat, against Count Binface.
Yeah, I mean, you're always in trouble as a politician if you become the subject of mockery. And he has definitely become subject, and particularly against Binface, who has become somewhat of a beloved character in British by-elections over the last number.
People might remember from days of yore, screaming Lord Such from the monster-raving Lunatic
exactly.
Party.
Yeah, yeah. So there's history, and this guy is no fool. I mean, he's capable of messaging very cleverly. And, you know, the constituency of Clacton, which I knew from my previous life in London, is a particularly deprived place. They're infuriated at the idea of having press all over them for the course of the summer. And I think they've already made that clear to any member of my trade who's been down there. What are they going to do? Are they going to stay at home? Are they going to vote for a candidate in the form of Farage, who has never been in the constituency practically since the day he was elected? And Farage is a charlatan of the highest order. But,
yeah,
you know, charlatans have got re-elected before. If he gets re-elected, even if it's by, you know, lousy numbers and all the rest of it, that is going to protect him somewhat against the Standards Commission investigation, which will almost certainly find that the 5 million that he got from the crypto billionaire is toxic money. And that is going to be difficult for him. But if he is re-elected, he will be able to say, the people of Clacton knew all this, they still re-elected me.
Now, the great hope for the Labour Party, of course, is the Burnham arrival, the coronation, if you like, and what he hopes to do already. I was watching Sky News this morning and they were talking about the Labour plan to abolish jury trials for cases that might bring a sentence of less than 3 years in jail.
Yeah.
He's going to throw that out.
Well,
he's
so
going to go back to jury trials.
So he should. I mean, there are huge issues in the UK court system. Massive delays, massive queues, really badly run and underfunded. Badly run because it's underfunded, I should say. So there's no doubt about that. But getting rid of those trials, one of the things that's happening in British courts, which is not happening here yet, although there's a danger that it might, is there's an increasing number of cases that are actually being dealt with in private. And you actually, in some cases, don't even know you've been convicted. So there are real issues here. I never understood why Starmer pushed this particular one, or more accurately, David Lammy, when he was in that role.
Now, the Dublin man convicted of murdering the American nurse in Budapest has been identified by some of the newspapers. The Irish Times, among others, chooses not to give his name. Explain the legalities around all of this.
The legal advice that we have is that he cannot be named until his appeal is concluded, even though it's a Hungarian law, not an Irish law.
Other papers have taken a different
other
view,
papers have taken
as we see
view.
This morning.
Yeah. And that is so it's a difficult issue. It's a particularly horrifying case, and if anybody reading the very large piece from Maeve Sheehan and Ali Bracken in the Sunday Independent, it is quite horrifying, the level of detail and how he sought to cover up his crime, the way in which he cleaned the apartment very carefully, the way in which he bought a suitcase, the way in which he transported the body to Lake Balaton, and the way in which he had searched online for whether corpses could be eaten by boar. This is pretty dark stuff.
Now, the issue that will not go away, and particularly in light of our presidency of the EU for the 6 months, is that of Ó Hinnis.
Yes, it is. And it has to be borne in mind that we have got a reputation, whether we like it or not, for amongst our fellow EU states and elsewhere, for lecturing an awful lot of people on ethical issues when it comes to diplomacy. And
occupied territories being an example.
Being that, and Gaza being another one. Now, I'm not making a comment about the merits of either of those arguments, but there's a lot of countries that have heard volleys coming from Dublin, and they are now taking a certain degree of schadenfreude in our difficulties on Ó Hinnis. And there's no doubt there's alumina coming from the plant in Limerick that is going to the Russian war machine that has been used for weaponry. Also, there's no doubt that a lot of that product is going elsewhere, and you know, cars for BMW and stuff like that. So all of that is going to have to be teased out. And the government says that, rightly says that it hasn't opposed sanctions against Ó Hinnis on 20 occasions since the Ukraine war began. But equally, those sanctions haven't worked. Mm.
Well, the question is, are sanctions supposed to primarily hurt the target of the sanctions? But if they hurt you more, then, like, would Russia notice if they can get their alumina somewhere else?
Well, I mean, there is a shortage of alumina globally, so you'd have to assume that there would be some negative impacts. There are 800
Therefore, you might think if you lose the Russian market, are there other markets for Irish alumina?
There almost certainly are. Whether Deripaska, the owner of it, of Ó Hinnis, the Russian billionaire, would be prepared to find alternative markets or not, given that he is presumably, like so many of these people in Russia, in danger of falling out a window if he falls on the wrong side of Putin.
Now, some of the news that didn't make it into the papers overnight was the death of Lindsey Graham, who died at the age of 71 after a short illness. A very controversial figure, because he was at one point somewhat beloved, even though, you know, bipartisan.
Yeah.
His pals were across the aisle and so on.
Yeah.
Then he condemned Trump. I mean, out of hand in 2016, he warned against electing Trump, that they could finish the Republican Party. And then he becomes a staunch Trump ally and an ally of Israel.
Yeah, and in the case of Trump, a craven one. I mean, he prostituted himself to get on the wrong side, or to get on the right side of Trump in ways that did little for his longer-term reputation.
I mean, perhaps. Listen to this, what he said. I have it online here. In May of 2016, he tweeted, "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it." In June 2016, after Trump criticized a judge of Mexican heritage, implying that he could be biased, Lindsey Graham said to CNN, "I don't think Trump is racist, but he's playing the race card. I think it's very un-American." How changed a man he became?
Well, that's the point. I mean, you know, he was friendly with John McCain, the Republican senator. He was regarded as being, whether you disagreed or agreed with him politically, he was regarded as being decent. And a lot of the opinions and the positions that he adopted in more recent years would frankly not qualify as either.
Now, he has, as I said, in recent times been a staunch ally of Donald Trump. But, and this is a famous moment, we've edited some bits together from his address to the Senate on January the 6th, 2021, defending the result of the election, which Trump claimed that he had won, but Lindsey said no.
"Many times my state has been the problem. I love it. It's where I want to die, but no time soon. I just think it's a uniquely bad idea to delay this election. Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate it being this way. Oh, my God, I hate it. From my point of view, he's been a consequential president. But today, first thing you'll see. All I can say is count me out. Enough is enough. I've tried to be helpful. But when the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled 4-3 that they didn't violate the Constitution of Wisconsin, I agree with the 3, but I accept the 4. If Al Gore can accept 5-4, he's not president. I can accept Wisconsin 4-3. There are people dying to my good friend from Illinois to make sure we have a chance to argue among ourselves. And when it's over, it is over. It is over. The final thing, Joe Biden, I've traveled the world with Joe. I hoped he lost. I prayed he would lose. He won. He's the legitimate president of the United States. I cannot convince people, certain groups, by my words, but I will tell you by my actions, that maybe I, among any, above all others in this body, need to say this. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are lawfully elected and will become the president and the vice president of the United States on January the 20th.
Now, it's interesting that we were talking about Mitch McConnell yesterday, and Trump didn't forgive him for Mitch McConnell's position on all of this because he allowed justice to take its course and so on and so forth. But he forgave Lindsey Graham.
Well, he did, because Lindsey Graham went down and bended knee in front of him and was craven. And most people who've watched American politics would see that as being the last honourable speech that Lindsey Graham gave. Because if you look at after the last election, the way in which he criticised and supported Trump's claims about voter fraudulent voting and all that, none of which has been proved, is the exact opposite of that. You know, there was an honourable record there, and a lot of it was thrown away.
And I think what will happen now, because, you know, he's dead, he's passed on, you can't libel the dead. There'll be a lot of stuff online about, you know, did somebody have the goods on Graham, and is this why Trump commanded silence?
That there has always been that allegation. Now, you know, most of those allegations tend not to be true, but so, you know.
All right, a couple of other things. The papers stayed awake long enough to get the England victory over Norway, but they didn't stay up for Argentina.
No, they didn't. And I mean, the England game, the second goal and the issue of it hitting the camera cable, I suppose you could argue is the latter-day hand of God coming in the English favour. So from this point of view, the gods do appear to be shining on them. You know,
we'll be talking to John Duggan in more detail about all of that. The other thing, it's not that palpable here, but if you were north of the border, you'd know it was the 12th of July.
You would, and I was in Rossnaula and Donegal yesterday for the annual Orange Parade there, the only one that takes place in the Republic, and you'd know it there. I mean, there were thousands of people gathered and in great sunshine, and it was family, and it was friendly, and it was warm, and it was welcomed, and Garda everywhere offering.
And this is what they were hoping it would become post-Good Friday Agreement, that this is the way it would evolve.
Yeah. And that is the way that it has been in
some places.
In Rossnaula particularly, I mean, to credit to everybody in the community on every side, it has been admirably done. And it is true too that, you know, the vast majority of orange marches that take place in the north never attract attention because they're perfectly calm and peaceful. Equally, you have a number that have all the bonfires, and even if the orange are not in control of many of those bonfires, which in some cases they're not, they do nothing to stop them.
And we know a man has died after falling from a bonfire.
And this is not the first. And some of it, you know, you're building bonfires within a touching distance almost of a library. There's one just off Great Victoria Street on a car park. So when it burns, obviously, you're not then have to go in and dig up the car park and relay it. I mean, this is insane, however you look at it.
And we'll be talking a little bit later on in the programme about unionism, loyalism, post the conviction of Geoffrey Donaldson. Anyway, Mark, for the moment, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor for the Irish Times, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.